Hey, everybody, it's Brian Burns, and welcome to this episode of the B2B Revenue Leadership Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about sales leadership, sales management, and how to maximize the revenue of your sales team. And this, even if you're in marketing, this will play well so that you understand the issues of great sales leadership. But before we get into it, I want to make sure you're checking out my partners over at Nudge.ai. If you're looking for a way of finding the relationships between your company and your target total addressable market, Nudge is the way to do it. They have a Salesforce plugin, and it can keep track of these relationships judged by social activity and email, and it'll help you understand exactly who has the best relationship with the company and how to leverage that to get into these new opportunities. Also, make sure you're checking out CoVideo. They've got these templates for the end of the year, for the holidays, so that you can send video thank you, video greeting cards. It's an insanely effective way to stay in touch with your prospects and your customers. And also check out b2brevenue.com, where I have both my free ebook on how companies buy, as well under training. There's courses that I give on an individual basis, as well as a company basis, where I will customize it to selling your product into your market space so that you can maximize your revenue in the coming year. That's it. Let's get into the interview, and I'll sum it up at the end. Hey, Kevin, thanks for joining us today. As a way of getting started, tell us about yourself.
Well, I started my sales career with Lanier, which is today part of Rico Corporation, selling copiers on straight commission. 10 years
easy.
Later, I'd... Yeah. Oh, sure. No problem. Today, they call it... office technology. Back then, it was copiers. but I worked my way up into sales and sales management. And in my last role there, I was a general manager in Southern California, where I hired and trained and coached over 250 salespeople. I both managed sales teams directly, as well as managed sales managers, each of whom had responsibility for their own teams. So, anyway, I've seen the challenges in moving from selling into managing, and from managing salespeople into managing sales managers. And those are a couple of big leaps in the sales profession, and I've had some experience of both.
And when you were a sales manager, did the reps, were they 100% commission?
Yes.
Wow.
Well, I mean, they had a base.
Okay.
But that base had to be recaptured in the form of a
draw.
Yeah.
Boy, that must be a little bit tough, huh? Because I guess all that you have hanging over the head is the draw and continued cooperation.
So that really drove my coaching methodology through necessity.
Yeah.
Because salespeople that we typically hired people in their mid-20s, you know, fresh out of college, maybe 1 to 2 years out of college. And if they didn't develop into an A player, they were going to get hired by other companies. Everybody poached us because we taught salespeople how to work, how to make cold calls, how to really have a high activity level. And so the B players tended to get offers after 12 to 18 months with us that paid them more money than they were making in straight commission. So it was kind of a no-brainer for them. Yeah. So the challenge as a manager to succeed there, to make your number, was you had to really focus on developing your salespeople into A players, where they made so much money that they couldn't afford to look at a pharmaceutical company sales position, for example. That would pay a high salary, but not a lot in commission. So it focused you as a manager on developing salespeople. And then obviously, after about 10 years in, with Lanier, I decided to punch out on my own. And that was back in the 1990s and really build a business around consultative selling training, as well as, sales manager development.
And let's talk about that A player. Could you characterize that for us from your perspective?
Sure. Well, an A player is someone that really, hopefully, you have more than one A player on your team.
Hopefully. Yeah.
Yeah. Because then what they do, the two A players do, is compete against each other, which is way above sales quota. But the optimal A player is possesses both high skill to sell as well as high will. They have a great attitude. They are exhibiting the types of behaviors that others on the team can follow and emulate. And so that's what we want, a well-rounded one who has both the skill and the attitude to succeed and the numbers to back up their sales excellence.
And how's that different than a B player? What's your characterization there?
So a B player is someone who doesn't quite possess the same level of coachability, meaning receptiveness to your coaching and ideas. They plateau quickly through reaching whatever their comfort zone is. They don't really want to apply the level of focus and commitment, and they don't want to make sales calls on Friday afternoon.
Yeah, that's it. And I call it kind of the B player trap, where they're good enough to, you know, make 80 to 100% of their number.
Yeah.
But they're not excited enough, and they think they know it all because they had a good year or good territory, and they think they were born on third base and hit a triple.
Totally agree. And keep in mind that these B players are the ones that many managers often ignore, because either the manager is off chasing big deals, which leads him or her to work with their best salespeople, or that manager is working on the worst people on the team. And so they tend to forget about the B players, and they only coach them when the B player comes and asks for coaching. So, and that's a huge mistake. If we have to be proactive with our sales coaching, take coaching to your people. Otherwise, there's a psychological syndrome called self-serving bias. Are you familiar with that one?
It sounds familiar. I'm trying to think of it, what the definition is.
So in the field of psychology, it's a pretty well-known concept where people tend to believe they are better than they are.
Oh, yeah, the Dunbar-Kruger syndrome, yeah.
Yeah, different name, label, whatever. But, so an example of this for a sales manager is, let's suppose a sales rep on your team has a great month and really exceeds quota. Well, they accept responsibility for their successes. So it's, hey, I had a great month. I made a lot of calls. I had some really good things I did. But then when that same sales rep has a lousy month, they don't accept responsibility for that. Well, it's lousy leads from marketing. My territory is the pits. But it's in that lack of responsibility for underperformance, where they kind of slough it off and they blame it on external factors. That, to me, is the difference between an A player and a B player. A B player will kind of blame those external factors. And the implication for anybody managing salespeople is that you've got B players that are making mistakes in their sales approach and they don't realize it.
And do B players really ask for coaching?
No, because they think they're better than they are.
Yeah.
And again, the manager is running around like a chicken with his or her head cut off, and not really focused on coaching and developing salespeople on a daily basis, which is a huge miss. And so the B player continues to be a B player, and we tolerate mediocrity. We tolerate their performance at a level far less than they're capable of. That's how we work with sales managers, to get them to take a step back, rethink their relationship with their role. I mean, every time they do something that someone else can do, they prevent the accomplishment of something that only they can do. And when that comes to the sales management role, coaching, developing, motivating salespeople, these are the priorities for sales management development. And, you know, unfortunately, they get stuck doing things that other people ought to be doing, like problem solving and expediting and, you know, taking care of all these other issues that tend to come up, the urgencies of the day. And they end up doing a lot of stuff that salespeople ought to be doing themselves. They do. They end up doing a lot of things that really aren't on the sales manager's job description.
Sure. And they get because they're under a tremendous amount of pressure. That first level sales manager, that's a tough job. I've had it several times. You know, the end of the quarter comes and even your A players are having a tough time with a deal, you know, getting the right meetings, the right pricing, the right actions to take place. The B players overestimate or underestimate how hard it's going to be. The C players are on a plan and you're trying to work them out while you still hire other people. And yeah, so you kind of jump in because if the deals don't close and you're goose egg for the quarter, or you really kind of come in at 80%, you got a big bullseye on your head.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's often driven by a company's culture to, you know, they get the forecast, then home office calls a manager and says, "Hey, urgent message from the home office. You got to get identify your top six deals, get out there and close them yourself." And you know, meantime, that sends a message to the sales manager that the most valuable use of their time is closing deals, which is, you know, it leads them to get involved too late in opportunities.
Yeah.
And if a mistake was made by a salesperson, it's usually weeks, sometimes months before the manager gets involved in that deal. It's just, it's not an effective way to coach. It's more of a judge, not a helper. And, so we got to help sales managers to, you know, to really focus on coaching and asking better questions. Like, before every sales rep delivers a demo, you got to ask questions of that sales rep to understand if they're actually ready to deliver that demo. Like, you know, what's your understanding of the prospect's buying criteria from most to least important? I mean, just that one question. If you don't understand as a salesperson the customer's priorities and needs an application before you deliver a demo, then you know, you're not going to deliver a compelling demo, one that can win. And once you do, well, guess what? The customer has no compelling reason to continue to talk to your salesperson, and so you back away.
Yeah.
And you lose communication. And then along comes a sales manager to say, "Hey, what's going on with that deal?" And we can't even get a hold of the customer.
Right. Yeah. They have no interest anymore. Or it's a low priority or never was a priority.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the sales rep just has, you know, you ask questions like, you know, which criteria does the customer have which represent a competitive edge for us? And you get crickets for an answer.
Yeah, I'm just getting my demos per week in. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that Brian is another key thing. See, a lot of managers have this mentality to drive activity.
Yes.
Which is quantity of effort. But in a sense that drives salespeople to kind of rush through their sales process. And that's not how big deals are won. And so anyway.
So when you go into an account, have you noticed a typical pattern of the current state that it's in?
How do you mean when you go into an account?
When you get a client, a new client, I'm sure there's certain circumstances from which they call you in and that you're a great fit for.
So most of the clients that we start to work with have frontline sales managers who are excellent salespeople, but they haven't really been educated on the specific goals, knowledge, skills required for sales management excellence. I mean, that's a mental leap. You go from being in control as a salesperson to being completely out of control as a sales manager. And how do you repurpose yourself? Sales managers are great teachers, but often that skill lies dormant within them, and it's not expressed often enough to have a significant impact on the team. And so, you know, we teach them how to overcome the obstacles that prevent effective coaching, and then we teach them how to coach. There are some methods for diagnosing a sales performance problem that that we just, you know, many sales managers haven't quite gotten there. So again, they've attended lots of sales trainings and they're highly skilled salespeople, but they haven't often been through sales manager development, and it's a completely different set of skills.
It's completely different. And even as salespeople, they're unconsciously competent typically, where they will knee jerk say, oh, it's all about the hustle and grind, or it's all about relationships or bringing insight, but they don't really understand or are able to articulate the whole game, that you're not playing just one skill, that it's, you got to win the game, not the inning.
Yeah, exactly right.
So how do you teach coaching? I would think that'd be difficult.
Well, the first thing to do is to help sales managers understand how important it is. And there are certain types of, for example, there was some research done that I cite in my book that says, okay, when you as a sales manager are talking to a salesperson, you know, which many sales managers will classify mentally as coaching, what is it that you're talking about? And they classified 13 different topics that sales managers discuss with salespeople. And then ranked them in order of frequency. Most of the top most frequent conversations were about specific deals. Number 12 out of 13 was identify skill deficiencies. And yet identify skill deficiencies was the one item which the research proved had a direct connection to sales performance. And so sales managers are having a lot of conversations with salespeople, but they're about stuff. They're not about skills. And that is kind of a mental shift that's easy to make but hard to fulfill. And that is to have that second opening, that second track of thought as a manager that says, why isn't this salesperson an A player? Why don't they possess the skill and will of my top salesperson? And if I ask myself that, then if I don't know the answer, right? In other words, that's one of the things we talk about in our sales management workshop, which is, hey, grade your people, right? And then, okay, you took 5 minutes to grade your team on their skill and will. Now, whose report card is this?
Yeah. It's like parents complaining about their kids. It's like, who created who?
Yeah, exactly. And then you can hear a pin drop as everybody in the room instantly realizes, oh geez, I just rated myself. And then we ask them, well, how did you arrive at these ratings of your people? Was it through observation and coaching, or was it through looking at the numbers, looking at their activity level in Salesforce, right? I mean, so we do so much management by results typically, and that's too late. We don't really get involved as near as much as we should in the deal coaching and the process of coaching an opportunity through it. It's just, you know, when are you going to close that deal? What do you need me to do to help you close that deal? In which case, you know, we're not really building skills. We're outside of that skill area. But to get back to your original question, when you assess a sales performance problem, you want to ask yourself, what skills does a salesperson lack, and what will or attitude do they lack that is diminishing their ability to apply the skill. And then your solution, your conversation has to bridge that gap. And skill and will problems are entirely different. I mean, I wish that the sales perform, my job would be a lot easier if all of the problems out there were skill related that salespeople have, but it's not. And the will problems are even more difficult to solve.
Well, the will you can very clearly identify and distinguish, and you know, salespeople are typically known for the will. Very few sales leaders can really dissect the skill. One used to call it the three T's: territory, timing, and talent. Well, you only have control over one of those, you know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And how do you really affect change and growth? But ultimately, a sales manager that has a coachable way, one that has applied his or her ability to teach, is somebody that's going to hopefully create a sales team that is hungry for improvement. And the benefits of coaching have been proven. I mean, the results are there if you do it consistently.
Now, have you thought, or have you run into companies who have made this a separate function, the coaching?
Sure. Where that's a bit of a cop out, right? Where they say, okay, we're going to have a field sales coach, and meanwhile, our managers are going to do everything else. I don't see it that often. I think that many times the territory, size of the territory is a barrier there. But I think that it's kind of lets the managers off the hook when I do see it, which is, I mean, I tell you, Brian, I recently a Fortune 500 company asked me, you know, to do as part of our work with them, to do a diagnosis of how much coaching was actually happening. And so the first thing I asked them to send me was their job description for the sales manager role. And as I looked at all the components of what they wanted their sales managers to do, 80 to 85% of the items in that job description were either directly related to coaching, or you couldn't do that particular item without coaching. So directly or indirectly related to coaching. And then I went out and to a number of their districts, about 8 or 9, and interviewed face-to-face their district managers. And what I found was that less than 5% of their time was spent actually talking to salespeople, let alone, you know, but that's that 13 different topics, of which only one is coaching. And now all of a sudden, so the implication is that perhaps less than 1% of a manager's time is devoted to coaching, but 85% of their job. Right? I mean, do you see the disconnect there?
Oh, I see it. And I think it's just getting worse. You know, I look through my career and my clients, and I lucked into a company where, you know, I don't think we called it coaching, but it was like, you know, call planning and postmortems and call strategy, because we were selling a very high-priced product, was part of the mm-hmm. culture. And I learned more there than any place I've been since. And I did it for 25 years, and that was the closest anyone came to any kind of coaching. And, you know, I'd say half the managers I worked for were accountants or dashboard forecast jockeys. And as a rep, you know, I didn't think they were that good. And second, what I needed from them was to get the company to, you know, be responsive to the things I needed to close the deal.
Yeah. Well, that's an opportunity missed, right?
Sure is, isn't it?
I mean, how keep also when you take a look back, I mean, you stay with them, what, 20, 24, 25 years is what you said. But But how long did it take you to really ramp up? And, you know, good coaching should result in faster ramp up of new hires to quota.
Yeah.
It should also, if you've got a nucleus of A players, at least more than one, even just one, as long as you're utilizing that A player as a, you know, as a, as an example for others on the team, then you have that positive example that others can emulate. I mean, for many sales managers, the example that they set for their people, I believe, is the second most important example being set on the team, that the most important example is the high-performing individual contributor. And if that individual that others on the team look up to, if that person is infected with stinking thinking, then what you have is a prima donna, a sales rep on your team who thinks that the rules are for other people.
A salesperson think that? Come on.
Well, that's, you know, happened? I mean, so what do you do? You know, I mean, you want to try to bring that person back into the fold and get them to support the company and the efforts. But that person can do a lot of damage on a team if they don't buy into the big picture of what you're trying to do and what the company is trying to accomplish.
Great. Hey, Kevin, I really enjoyed this conversation. Where do people go to connect with you, get your books, and learn more about your work?
Well, connect with me on LinkedIn at Kevin F. Davis. That's F as in Frank, as a middle initial. My Twitter handle is at Kevin F. Davis. And, of course, The Sales Manager's Guide to Greatness is the name of my sales management book. It's been out a year, and it's available on Amazon.com in audiobook, hardcover, ebook, whatever your pleasure. It's right there on Amazon or wherever books are sold. The Sales Manager's Guide to Greatness.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to this episode. And I really would appreciate everybody who goes on to LinkedIn, connects up with me, or follows me there. If you happen to see some of my content flying by, if you could throw a little thumbs up or a comment or a share, I definitely appreciate it. It helps spread the word about the podcast. And make sure you're checking out my website, b2brevenue.com. You can get my free book on how companies make product selections. It's a real book. It is on Amazon, but I give it away for free. Just register there. It'll email you a link to it, and you can just download the PDF from there. Also, if you want to check out the courses, start the conversation, get the meeting, or closing the complex sale, and you have more questions about it, the short answer is there are video courses. You get access for a year, but it's also a community. What does that mean? You can ask questions anytime via voicemail or email. I answer them within a week, put them into the course. We have office hours every other week. It's an hour long where you course where you can basically I pick a topic, answer questions, you can ask questions. Also, you can schedule one-on-ones for free, and we just talk through your particular use case, and that gets shared with the course. So if you don't have time for office hours, or the timing doesn't work, or you just want some more one-on-one help, that's all included for a whole year. So it's really a year to go from where you are to where you want to be. And so it's not just videos. It's not just knowledge. It's practice. It's getting feedback. You can send me emails. You can send me your presentation. I'll help you with anything that you need to close the complex sale or get the meeting. And you can check out them at b2brevenue.com. So that's it. I really appreciate it. And please tell somebody about the podcast and let me know if I can help you in any way. Oh, and you want to hear some results from the course? Well, here you go.
You know, I love the approach. It's working for me just fantastic. If I sent you some of the emails, which I should, the conversations that I'm having with people, I think you'd be blown away because they're not really about work. Yep. I've figured out if you can kind of get personal with them, like one lady, it's all about her family, kids. And then I sprinkled in a little bit around work and she's LinkedIning, sending me messages on LinkedIn, photos of her family. No, I'm not even kidding. I should show this to you. You'd be stunned. I was shocked. And we're going, we're going to lunch on September 6th. And yesterday she shot me a LinkedIn message and said, "Hey, Ron, why don't we get on the phone and do a video call beforehand so our lunch isn't so awkward? We're like barely not meeting each other for the first time." Oh, holy cow. Right? Like, this is unbelievable. So this is not the first time that this has happened. She's kind of an extreme.
Yeah.
But I'm starting to figure out a pattern where I can actually make this a process, you know? So
good. Yeah.
I'll show you that. So it's getting to that point, and I'm kind of, every time I do this, I'm like, God, this is unbelievable, you know? So,
and it feels better too, doesn't it?
Oh, Brian, let me tell you something. To be able to go to lunch with her, I'll even talk to her on the phone, right? We're going to talk about family, kids, work-life harmony. Because I shared a thing with her from Bezos about work-life harmony. This is where the conversation will start. Now, at some point, we're both not stupid, right? We know we're going to talk about work. We know why we're both there.
Right.
But to kick it off this way is so much better. And to end that lunch with the last 5 to 8 minutes of telling, you know, well, what are you guys doing with digital?